This is Community Matters on 92 Gold. If it matters to you, it's on Community Matters.
Thank you for joining me for the Community Matters program on 92 Gold and 104.3 Kinzu Country. And today, joining me on the Community Matters program are people that are members of the Quarry Art Gallery that are doing a really important job right now highlighting an amazing exhibit that's available at the Quarry Art Gallery. And with that being said, I'm being joined by Adrian Grimes, Ruth Barnes-Shaw, and Thomas Paquette. Thank you all for taking the time to join me today. I'm really excited to highlight the new exhibit that's currently available at the Quarry Art Gallery, and I'm excited to learn about some of the backstory behind it. So with that being said, I'd like to start out by asking Adrian, how did you get involved with, you know, helping to bring this exhibit in and help with curating some of the pieces?
I am pretty new to town. Sorry, my dog's walking by. But I've been here about 2.5 years, and about a year ago, things with the pandemic were getting a little better. I was kind of tired of working at home in a place where I didn't know anybody. I was pretty brand new. And I had reached out to the gallery to just start volunteering. I thought just like proctoring or anything I would have been happy with. And I had emailed, and then Thomas reached out to me and so he'd be happy to meet with me, and that he talked about this opportunity that he had to show an artist, Paul Momer, who is was pretty involved in like the same circle as like Jackson Pollock and Mark Rothko and Peggy Bacon, just very influential names in like 1950s New York City art world. The Quarry, I'm sure Thomas will want to talk about this a little more, but the Quarry had a piece of Paul Momer's work in their collection, and it like led to the family reaching out and wanting to do a show. And I have a background in art history. I have my bachelor's in art history, and I have my master's in critical theory, which was I spent most of that time. My focus was art theory and things like that. So, I don't know. The expertise lined up. It was a good opportunity at the, you know, just kind of everything aligned. And, I started working with Thomas on that. I ended up being on the board of the Quarry, and it's been a pretty cool experience for sure.
Really interesting. Now, one thing that I'm curious to kind of discuss with this is, you know, how did you get to a position here where you were able to kind of ask that family for some of those pieces as they're, you know, starting to unearth this collection and go through it? You know, how were you able to get in touch with them and start that process?
That was, I think, almost all Thomas. So I'll let him tell you that story, getting in touch.
I'll jump in here. Mm-hmm. Sure. Well, so I was looking through our collection, and we had highlighted a painting that I found in the collection that I thought was just a gorgeous little example of modernist painting that we have a few examples of. And somebody had seen this image and thought that name and that image looked familiar. Wait, that looks like my Hollywood film partner's great-grandfather. It was Kevin Ignatius, a local person here now, but he had been running a company in LA, and he was good friends with his partner and recognized the name Paul Momer. And so he contacted his friend, his partner, and they indeed found out, yes, this is the same Paul Momer, and what a weird coincidence. Just two doors down from where you live there, they have this great painting by my great grandfather. And so we got in conversation and thought it might be really cool to have a exhibition completely dedicated to his work.
Wow, that is so fascinating. And you know, it's amazing to see the way that it is grown and became what it is. And, you know, I'm excited to learn a little bit more about it. Adrian, would you mind going through some of the work that you did with writing the essay about these pieces here that are going to be highlighted? And would you mind going through kind of what the main points of it were for, like, the talking points?
Sure. So, it was a big project because, like I said, there was not a whole lot out there beyond family stories, and like the family has some pretty amazing stories of going to like openings at the Met and like Jackson Pollock's house in the summer and like really just like kind of mind-blowing stories, right? But they were not more than just family stories, right? So I had to do some work trying to validate some of that, and which worked with, they have the artist's, I think it's his great granddaughter. She was involved in the first show, the first like huge show that they did that was dedicated to him, since his death, and about, I think it was in 2016. She was in high school, and her art teacher, she found out somehow down the line that she was getting her doctorates in art history, and reached out to her because she knew that the family had all of this art and that her great-grandfather must have been somebody that was like pretty big in this art world, and invited her to come and see the work. And it turned into this show that they hosted in a gallery in Long Island. And her and the art teacher had spent, I think, a couple of years pulling together some research. So they were nice enough. The great granddaughter was nice enough to share that with me, that, there was some stuff in there that I was able to work with. I went to the American Art Archives, which is hosted through the Smithsonian. And from there was able to find places where he'd exhibited, different clubs and foundations that he'd been a part of and like president of, and, then able to see from there that some of these names that were pretty influential. Milton Avery pops up a lot in his work, Peggy Bacon, Mark Rothko, things like that, where they were also in these clubs. So I think, it was at least a start, something to validate that he was in this circle and he was a pretty big part of it. I don't know. So it was a lot of research. It was a lot of trying to like figure out and learn like, well, where are the best places to go to find this sort of research? Some of it was a learning experience for me, but I enjoy the research part of it. I think that was my favorite part. I found it very interesting. What I found, though, I think as I was putting together all of this research and writing this essay, was that, I don't know, like it's his art is amazing. His paintings are amazing, and they're definitely, you can definitely tell that he was a student of this time. Like he, you can tell who he was influenced by. You can tell maybe even who he was learning by, I think, just based on the various like vast styles of his paintings. But I found that like the importance of his story was not necessarily like in his paintings, but more that he was like this time capsule for this period of time. And the kind of like a little bit like this fly on the wall for this moment and these people that are in history books and that are just so influential and so fascinating. And it's kind of like an outsider's view into what they were doing. And I don't know, that's what I ended up focusing, I think, most of the essay on, was just that this experience of digging through this time capsule. I had the opportunity to go down to Long Island, which is where they keep a lot of his work in a storage unit. And just being able to go through there and like dig through all of his work and just see it all there. That's the only way I think to describe it, is like, it's just a time capsule for this period of time. And these, this, I think that that's really like his legacy now is that, but it's just this really interesting look at what was going on and the
that
people
is just that were so fascinating to see and try to imagine. Wow. So, you know, with that being said, what I'm kind of curious to talk about with that is this exhibition that we've been talking about here, is this one that is going on right now, Thomas?
Yes, there are actually two exhibitions going on at the same time. They're both up for the entire month of October and into November 6th. So, yes, so Paul Momer is the focus in the main gallery and a couple of other galleries. And then we have an exhibition where we're highlighting works that are actually have been in our collection for quite a number of years, 25 years we've had them on display, not in our collection, but they're on loan mostly from the Historical Society. And Ruth Barnes, Dr. Ruth Barnes Shaw, put together an essay to talk about those works' significance and about Marion Sanford herself. The sculptures are by Marion Sanford, and the show is called A Woman at Work. And I'd like to have Ruth speak a little bit about that, if that's okay.
Yeah, absolutely. I'd love to be able to learn about that.
Hi, Aaron. How are you? Nice to see you again.
Yeah, good to see you as well. Yeah, absolutely. So
in a different capacity.
Right. Well, Ruth, thank you for being able to take the time to join us. I really do appreciate
it.
And so, you know, I understand you've been really busy covering and learning all about Marion Sanford and these really amazing sculptures that she's been able to work on. And so would you be able to go through and teach us about what you've covered in this essay and, you know, what the exhibition shows?
Oh, I'd love to. But I'm just scratching the surface here. I did very, very little. The folks at the Crary did most of the work. I just got to do something fun and learn about this amazing woman and her work. And it's what's extraordinary, Aaron, is that she was known not only nationally but internationally. And she's right here from, you know, she comes from right here in Warren, born and raised in Warren County, and, you know, graduating from Warren High School. And she entered the world of professional art, you know, as a professional sculptor, when it still wasn't, you know, a job that women did, that women undertook, albeit there were known women sculptors, but not like Marion Sanford. And, you know, many of the women at that time, she worked in the 30s and 40s, primarily 1930s and 40s. And many of the women who were sculptors at the time were apprentices to male sculptors. So quite extraordinary that she was able to, you know, do this work of her own, even eventually having her own studio with her partner, and who often would pose for her as well. They were both sculptors, but the thing that I love about Marion's work was that it was, as Thomas alluded to, it was truly women at work. And most of the sculptures of women at the time were very lithe and graceful and delicate. They were dancers. Sometimes they were like goddesses or nymphs or fairies, or women would do portraiture. But Marion Sanford took a totally different direction. And she had women doing what we call, you know, reproductive work or daily work. They would be scrubbing floors. They would be washing clothes, picking potatoes, picking apples, stomping grapes, plowing fields, churning butter, things that we don't think of as you know, graceful or maybe pretty work, you know, attractive. But she made it beautiful. And as I was saying to Thomas the other evening at the gallery opening, when we think of strength, you know, we think of, you know, 240-pound linebackers in the NFL. You know, we think of weightlifters. We think of huge sequoia trees. we don't think of, you know, women necessarily engaged in daily work, in daily chores. But these women, there's a softness to their strength, which almost seems, you know, a juxtaposition, but they're soft, yet they're strong, and their beauty comes from that strength. The textiles, the clothing that they're wearing is, it almost becomes part of their bodies, and not in like a diaphanous way, like, you know, like a Nike of Samothrace, you know, not like a Greek goddess, but in a beautiful way that is dancer-like. And her work becomes maybe almost less about the work and more about the movement, more about the gracefulness of daily work, their strength doing something that needs to be done day in and day out, that almost becomes arduous. And these women in these sculptures are, there's a subtle beauty in the repetitiveness of their work, in just the way their muscles move, in just the way they're picking the apples or churning the butter. And they may not be what we might consider classic beauties, but there's such a grace and an elegance.
I really love the idea of what these sculptures represent, you know? And what I'm kind of curious to discuss with this is, like, how do you think these sculptures contrast with the artwork that is being shown as another exhibition at the same time? Like, how do you think the sculptures and the paintings contrast together?
Work by Paul Maumer, that's also in the, actually, I wouldn't say they contrast so much as they complement each other. Maumer's work is so real, and there's almost a rawness to it. But yet it's not kind of an in your face rawness. There's a slight subtlety in his work as well that I see in Marion Sanford's work. It's as I said, it's not something that's goddesses or fancy architectural, you know, cathedrals or something. It's daily life. It's daily work, and a lot of Maumer's work is more abstract, but their work is almost glorifying our daily lives, you know, day-to-day work, day-to-day tasks, day-to-day people. And I think it's a lovely complement between the two of them. I see them going hand in hand very beautifully. And maybe Adrian has other thoughts on that. You know, I'd love to hear what she thinks about that. But I see them as complementary more than anything.
Yeah. What are your thoughts, Adrian?
Yeah, I think they definitely are. I think that Ruth, you are spot on when you were saying, you know, that Paul Maumer has a, you know, that he paints with a lot of, he's very, I mean, I think, has a realistic mindset and just that captures that kind of day-to-day life stuff. I think, you know, when you go and you view his stuff, it is, he's not using bright, sunshiny colors, you know, he's using darker colors and muted tones and things like that. And, you know, it's not a way that people usually want to see these things, you know, see these places and these landscapes and the things that he's painting. It's definitely reflective, I think, of his, you know, his backstory and how, you know, he was a prisoner of war in an English prison camp in World War I. And, you know, it reflected a lot in his view and how he took things in and all of that. And it's interesting to talk to his family about it and in his own work, interviews that have been done, were done with him when he was alive and essays that he wrote, he has kind of almost a cheerful tone about it, like, Yeah, they're just, that's how I paint. Like I look at a blue sky and it looks gray and it's just how it is. And it's definitely a tone of a more realistic day-to-day life versus like an idealized day-to-day life. And I think there's definitely clear undertones of that in Sanford's work as well.
Wow, that is just really fascinating. And it seems like those two would just go together extremely well. Now, one of the things that I'm curious in discussion with this is how long are these exhibitions going to be available at the Crary, and what times are people available to come check them out?
Well, one thing I'd like to say before I answer that is that just as a happenstance and a by the way sort of thing, the two artists were actually working in New York at the same time for decades. And I thought that was a curious juxtaposition, and also, you know, ties into the idea of being complementary. I mean, I wonder if they've ever crossed paths. They were close enough to have been in the same circles, I'm sure, but it's interesting. The shows will be going through November 6th, and we're open Friday, Saturday, and Sunday with hours on Friday and Saturday from noon to 6 and Sunday noon to 4. Or is it 3? Better check our website to make sure.
Yeah, absolutely. I do recommend you check out the Crary Art Gallery website for all the details and information that you could be looking for with that. But, you know, Thomas, you bring up a really great point when you mentioned that last thing there, that, you know, they were working in the same area in the same period of time. I find that to just be absolutely fascinating. That was something that I had, it's a question that I had had on the back burner since the beginning of this, when we had started discussing these two and, you know, just how they do similar, like what you guys had mentioned, similar themes of work, but in different ways, being one with painting and one, you know, with sculpting work. But it's just so fascinating to be able to learn about this. And I'm really glad that we were able to take the time to be able to talk with you guys today and discuss this stuff. So thank you both for, well, both, I guess I should say, thank you all for taking the time to join me today. I'm really glad that we could talk. And Thomas, Adrian, and Ruth, you guys are really amazing, and you guys are doing great work at the Crary. And I hope that everyone can come by and see everything that you guys have put together for this, because this looks like a really amazing exhibit, prepared exhibits.
There was a lot of effort put into it for years. And there are two catalogs presented for each of the shows. And as you mentioned, these two women both wrote essays for them. So we're happy to share that with anybody who comes in.
Absolutely. Well, thank you all for taking the time to join me today. I'm glad that we could highlight this.
Thank you, Aaron.
Thank you for listening to Community Matters. If you have any questions, inquiries, or suggestions, feel free to reach out at warrenradio.com and click contact.
Green News Now 10-2 Credit Union Football Fridays. We have all the local hard-hitting action and the big plays. The Erie Sports Now team takes you around the region each Friday, bringing you the highlights from your favorite team's game. And we get you ready for the big NFL weekend ahead with expert analysis from Jovan Johnson. Each Friday starting at 11:15 on Erie News Now, presented by 10-2 Credit Union.